place fuses with pennies, people who text while driving, and tax codes so Byzantine not even the IRS really knows what they mean, so I nodded sympathetically. I know that you are married to the werewolf, Lucia told me. You understand about animals who can be dangerous under the right circumstance. If your friend Stalker has canarios, he could train them so that they kill on command. Honey bared her teeth and growled. All four dogs rose to their feet and surrounded Lucia. But they didn't act upset, just ready. Dogs are better than people at reading body language. Big dogs are just dogs, said Honey. I am a wolf. She looked at the Amstaffs, who returned her look unafraid and ready to defend their person if they needed to. But you, little brave cousins, Honey said, half amused under their regard, you I would take with me on a hunt. Not many people could call Lucia's dogs little and mean it. I would guess that it took a werewolf to feel that way. They looked plenty big to me. Lucia, far from being intimidated by Honey, smiled. Brave? Yes, they will take on anything to defend Joel or me. Her smile dropped away. Your friend, Christy had promoted herself from my husband's ex to my friend, said that this man's dogs were difficult, but he had no trouble with them. That tells me that they are his dogs and that they are very well trained. His dogs then will be as mine. They will not know that he is a man who attacks women who cannot fight back, a man who is a coward. They will only know that this man is their god, the one they must listen to and protect. Canarios are courageous. They will not run from you just because you are a werewolf. I'm not actually a werewolf, I told her apologetically, but I appreciate the insight. Do you know anyone who raises canarios? Someone we can talk to about other breeders? She nodded. I do. She left and returned with a card. These people live in Portland and breed canarios. They are very well known and reputable. If Christy Stalker is a breeder or an avid fancier, they will know of him. I called Warren as soon as we were in the van. He took the information and assured me that he was doing his best to find Juan Flores so Christy could go back to Eugene. Thank you, I told him sincerely, and he laughed as he rang off. Honey was thoughtfully silent on the drive back to her house. I stopped in her driveway, and she opened the door. But she stayed in the van for a moment as she looked at her house. Maybe I need to get a dog, she said. Between the prison trip and Lucia's help with the dogs, I managed to come home very late on Tuesday and escaped quality Christy time for the most part. Though I hadn't planned to, I left before breakfast was made the next morning. I had a last-minute fix Wednesday night that kept me nearly an hour later than usual. The thought occurred to me that if I could avoid home long enough, maybe I wouldn't have to talk to her before she left. I went home confident I'd be too late for dinner, but when I came in the door, Christy met me with a smile. "You are in luck," she told me. "Adam had an errand to run, so I waited dinner for him. You have about 15 minutes to shower," she wrinkled her nose. Thanks, I said, as if she hadn't just sent me off to clean up. I'd intended to shower because I was sweaty and dirty. I wasn't going to behave like I was 13 and refuse to do it because she'd told me to, no matter how strong the impulse. I was in my bathroom pulling off my clothes when I heard Adam come into the bedroom. I didn't want to have him see how agitated she'd made me, so I just continued to get ready to shower.
3 days since Christy got here, and we've made no progress, Mercy.
Adam's voice came slightly muffled from the bedroom.
It's not that Juan Flores doesn't leave traces. It's that none of them mean anything. It's starting to look as though he might really be someone dangerous. My connections with the DEA tell me that they have 10 Juan Floreses on their watch list, none of them up high enough in the money to be Christy's Juan Flores.
He neared the bathroom, and I heard him open a drawer.
They say it might mean that he's not a drug trafficker, or that he's so big no one talks about him. I've worked it out with a few of my people so I can work from home until we find him.
He paused, then said in a low voice,
You should know that Christy asked me to stay home because she doesn't feel comfortable with the wolves if I'm not here.
I turned on the shower to let it warm up,
as well as give me a chance to think about what I wanted to say to Adam. But when I turned, I was confronted by a large plastic see-through box covered with sparkly pink rhinestones that held a huge collection of makeup. Christy's makeup was in my bathroom, on my counter next to my sink. At least I thought she hadn't put it next to Adam's sink. "Don't we have another bathroom upstairs that Christy could use to store her makeup?" I asked. There was a long silence. Then Adam said,
"There wasn't room for her stuff and Jesse's stuff in the smaller bathroom."
Another pause.
"I told her you wouldn't mind."
I got in the shower and stuck my head under the hot water so I couldn't say anything I would regret. Coyotes weren't as territorial as a rule as werewolves, but we still had our hard lines. Having Christy flouncing in and out through my bedroom into my bathroom crossed one of my hard lines. I washed my hair and tried to let things, the ugly, unpleasant things I was feeling, slide down the drain with the rest of the grime that had covered my skin. The shower door opened, and Adam stepped in.
"I'm sorry," he said.
I shook my head and leaned against him. The feel of his skin next to mine went a long way toward restoring my equanimity. "She probably asked you if I'd mind," I said, and managed to imply that only a small-minded, petty person could possibly object to her husband's ex-wife moving her makeup into the larger, brighter bathroom. If you told her she couldn't, then you'd have been implying that I was a petty, mean-spirited person.
"And jealous," he added. "I'm sorry."
I shook my head. "I love you," I told him. "I love the man you are. But her makeup is not staying here. I won't have her in our bedroom, in our bathroom, but I will take care of it." I smiled at him. "I don't care if she calls me jealous or petty. Not your worry. So, still no real information on Flores?"
"No,"
he said, soaping up his hands and starting to wash himself off briskly.
"The Reno packs in a couple of wolves to talk to the hotel where Christy met Flores. Turns out he comes there every year about the same time, checks in under different names for which he has ID, but that is apparently not unusual despite government regulations. There's an actor who regularly checks in there under the name of the secret identity of the last superhero he played. But the staff remembers him because of the dogs, and confirm that whatever name he's registered as, he still goes by Juan Flores."
I had followed Adam's example and scrubbed myself down as he talked. I even managed to soap my hair and condition it before the magnetic draw of Adam's skin forced me to touch him.
"He can speak native quality Spanish, but his accent is weird,"
Adam told me. But his voice was a little unsteady, and he braced himself against the corner of the shower.
"Not from Spain, Puerto Rico, Cuba, or Mexico. The Argentinian maid said he sounded Colombian. The Colombian maid said, maybe Venezuelan, and he used very old-fashioned..."
"Old-fashioned what?" I asked, letting my mouth follow my hands. Adam answered. Someone knocked on the bathroom door.
"Hurry up, Mercy," Arielle said briskly. "Christy's made her famous Sichuan chicken, but it needs to be eaten right now."
I backed away, and Adam snarled soundlessly.
"Yeah," I said. "Me too."
On the way down for dinner, I collected Christy's things and set them down in front of her door.
"You aren't going to talk to her?"
Adam asked. "I don't need to," I told him. "She'll get the message." If I had to give it again, she'd be buying new makeup and a new case, but I was pretty sure this would be enough. I always start work early, a habit formed in summers when the afternoon sun can heat the garage 10 degrees hotter than the triple-digit figures outside. But Thursday morning, I had left home while the sky was still dark just to get away from the breakfast Christy had been in the process of making. Nothing horrible had happened at dinner, but I didn't want to repeat it either. Tad didn't show up at work until almost an hour after I did.
"No brownies?" he asked.
"Christy has taken over my kitchen," I told him as I wrote the last check for the garage's bills. "No stress relief for me. No chocolate for you."
"No chocolate?" he said, leaning on the counter. "That's terrible."
He waited hopefully, and when I didn't say anything more, he asked,
"So, what did she make for us today?" I waved him at the brown paper bag sitting next to my keyboard. He sniffed, then opened it.
Cinnamon rolls?
You can eat these in here, I said, and licked the last envelope closed. Eat them both. They have Christy cooties.
The muffins were good, he said. So is the apple pie. I guess I can do without chocolate if the alternative is cinnamon rolls.
There was sympathy in his voice, if not his words. Blasphemer, I told him. There are no cinnamon rolls better than chocolate. He sniffed again.
These might be.
I left him to it and retreated to go work on cars. In my garage, I ruled without question and had since Z had retreated to the Fay reservation. Her makeup case wasn't going to end up in my garage. But as soon as I put Christy out of my mind, I started fretting over my inability to find Coyote. I'd been pretty optimistic after Honey had grilled Gary Laughing Dog, but I hadn't had any brainstorms about how to be interesting enough to attract Coyote's attention. Last night, I'd resorted to yelling Coyote's name to the open air, well away from home, to make sure no werewolves would hear me making an idiot out of myself. I tried talking to Coyote as if he were in the same room to see if he would come out of hiding, and wondered if I was going to have to mastermind a bank heist in order to attract his attention. I was contemplating criminal activities when Hank called. I peeled off the stupid latex gloves so I didn't get grease on my phone. Christy had done that much for me. Since I started wearing the gloves, my phone was staying cleaner. Hey, Hank, I said.
You talk with Gary?
Something in his voice had me straightening my spine. Yes?
Hope you got the information you needed.
What's wrong?
Last night or this morning, Laughing Dog escaped. One of his relatives called me to see if I thought you might have had something to do with it.
No, I said. I wondered who Gary Laughing Dog's relatives were, and if they might be able to tell me how to get in touch with Coyote. I don't think so. Did you know that he has some kind of foresight?
Yes, said Hank, and much joy he's ever gotten from it. Gets him into trouble and never out, he says. You think he saw something and broke out?
I don't know him well enough to say that, I said. He had a couple of visions while we were there, mostly a bunch of nonsense. But he'd known Honey's name. Something to the effect of Coyote's, I remembered that odd pronunciation, somebody's children, breaking the night with their cries. I don't know anyone else besides the two of us who qualify. Maybe he saw something that made his escape necessary.
And maybe Coyote's kin don't do well in lockup, Hank said. No more than does anyone, but Coyote was always good at getting out of places he didn't want to be. Anyway, you can expect to see police sometime. They'll talk to everyone on his visitors list, and there are about four of us up in the Yakima Nation and you. He's not big time, but breaking out might make him more important to them. They don't like being thwarted.
They, I knew, referred to the authorities of whatever flavor. Hank didn't like people who could tell him what to do, and he avoided them by being a very law-abiding citizen. Thank you for the heads up, I said.
Probably he's just gone walkabout. Show up with another name in 10 or 20 years. He does that.
Walkabout? I said doubtfully. Isn't that an Aussie Aboriginal term?
An Indian is an Indian, Mercy, no matter what continent they come from, he said with a grin in his voice.
Before I could disagree, he disconnected. So I wasn't surprised when the police showed up in the afternoon.
Mercy.
Tony? I looked up from the Passat I was working on. There was something wrong with the injectors, but it was intermittent, and I was afraid that meant it was electronic, and probably something to do with the computer. And that would explain why the car's computer hadn't been able to tell me what was going on.
Mercy, I need you to clean up and come talk to me.
I blinked at the tightness in his voice and focused on his face. Trouble, that expression said, and in response I backed out of the job, pulling bolts and pieces out of my pockets and putting them on the car where they wouldn't be lost. I peeled off the latex gloves and tossed them. Tad, I said. The sound of the crawler's hard wheels on pavement signaled his emergence from under the Vanagon he was repairing. I'm headed off with Tony for a bit. Don't burn down the garage or run off the customers while I'm gone. Tad glanced from Tony's face to mine and said mildly, Is it okay if I call in a few strippers to put on a show and charge it to the garage? I've been thinking it might pull in some more customers. Sure, I said as I stepped out of my overalls. In the interest of time, I didn't bother to retreat to the bathroom. I was wearing a full set of clothes underneath anyway. Just make sure Christy makes it over in time for the show so she can tell the pack what kind of place I run here. Oh, and tell her I took off with a hot-looking man. He grimaced.
Yeah, sorry about that.
She'd called yesterday, and knowing how I felt about her, Tad had told her that I'd gone out for a run. Tad doesn't usually lie, though since he is only half fey, he can, and he is a fair hand at misdirection. I had been in the garage bay, and he'd answered my cell in the office where I'd left it. Next thing I know, I was getting a call from Adam, who was mad because he thought that I had been running without protection. Grocery stores and other public places were unlikely spots for kidnapping the Alpha's wife. Running I had to do with company, for safety's sake. I regretted it, but I understood the necessity. I'd explained that Tad had been mistaken when he talked to Christy. I took the blame for it, thus putting myself firmly in the wrong. The pack figuratively, maybe literally for all I know, patted Christy on the head for being so worried about my well-being. Not your fault, I told Tad. Christy would have found something else to make me look bad anyway. Though this time you might mention that the handsome man is an armed police officer who will keep me safe as a fox in a hen house. Tad gave me a mock salute while I followed Tony out.
Trouble? Tony asked.
Adam's ex-wife has a stalker, so she is living with us until we can figure out what to do about him, I told him as matter-of-factly as I could manage. He stopped and looked at me, and finally lost the odd distance I'd sensed, as if I'd been a stranger he'd been sent to fetch. Maybe he was worried that I had had a hand in Gary Laughing Dog's escape.
Adam's ex-wife is living with you? He asked incredulously.
Her stalker is dangerous, I told him. We are pretty sure he killed a man and burned down the building her condo was in. Until someone can find him and arrest him, Christy is staying with us, because even a violent man might hesitate to face off with a pack of werewolves. I had added the arrest him part because it sounded good. I was pretty sure at this point that any arrest would be post-mortem. Maybe it had been a mistake because something in the last sentence put the distance right back between us.
I can see that, he said,
and continued walking to his car. I followed, and when he opened the passenger door for me, I got in. We sat in front of the garage for a minute, and I waited for him to ask me about Gary Laughing Dog's escape from prison.
I saw what you became, he said instead. Over at Kyle Brooks's house, when the body that was in the trunk of the car broke out and you and Adam tried to chase it down.
I looked at him. Yep, that cat was out of the bag for sure. I'd changed into my coyote shape to go chase after a zombie and had forgotten about all the people watching. Tony hadn't been the only one who'd gotten an eyeful. I'd grown used to having more people know what I was, and hadn't even thought about what I was doing and who I was doing it in front of. In most ways, it wouldn't matter if I shouted out that I was a coyote shapeshifter, a walker, to the whole world. I wasn't alone anymore. In other ways, though, it was possibly disastrous. If the public realized that the Fae and the werewolves were just the top of the anthill of other that lived hidden among the human population, it could be bad. Bad for humans, and bad for everyone else, too. Yes, I said. It was a question, because we weren't sitting in the car just so I could confess to being a coyote shapeshifter.
I asked Gabriel about it.
Gabriel had been my right hand in the garage before he went to college, and Tony had been infatuated with Gabriel's mother for as long as I'd known him.
He told me something about what you are.
Tony met my eyes.
You aren't human.
No, I agreed slowly. Not completely. He huffed an unhappy breath.
If there was someone in the pack murdering humans, would you cover for him?
I sucked in a breath. You have a body?
You didn't answer the question.
His reply had answered mine, though. If we had someone going around killing people for the fun of it, I said, I'd tell Adam.
And what would Adam do?
Silence hung between us. I'd known Tony a long time. Long enough, I decided, to tell him the real truth instead of sugarcoating it. Adam would deal with it before the police could step in. The Fae's sudden retreat to the reservations has put the werewolves on trial in the court of public opinion. We can't allow a murderer to stand trial or continue to rampage.
Are you a werewolf? He asked. I mean a werewolf who turns into a coyote. A were-coyote.
There, coyote. I grinned at him and received a look. No, I'm not a werewolf or were-coyote, which I have never heard of, by the way. I have a different kind of magic entirely. Native magic, not European like the werewolves are. Mostly turning into a coyote is about all I manage. I wasn't going to explain to him about the ghosts or my partial immunity to magic, which was nothing I could count on anyway. It would be best if you didn't tell everyone about what I can do, though. Best for the public, who don't need to be looking at their neighbors and worrying if they are something from a horror show. If they think werewolves and fae are it, then everyone is safer. Tony nodded, as if that thought had occurred to him, and he'd already been on board with keeping my secrets secret.
You included yourself with the werewolves, though.
I shrugged. I'm married to one, and he made me an official member of the pack. Not just in name, but in fact, accepted by the pack magic that bound us all together. But Tony didn't need to know that. Even less than shape-shifting coyotes did people need to know that there was such a thing as pack magic. Where are you going with this, Tony? He looked away, not happy. He patted the steering wheel nervously.
I need to know if I can trust you.
For some things, I told him seriously. You can trust me not to leave people helpless against a monster, a human monster or a werewolf monster. I don't help bad guys, even if they are someone I thought I liked or felt some loyalty to. Bad guys need to be stopped. That apparently had been the right thing to say.
Okay, he said with sudden assurance. Okay, yes.
He turned on the car and pulled out with a squeal, switching on his lights but not his siren.
We need your help with something.
And that's all he said. But that something took us past the old Welch's factory, past the Welcome to Finley sign, past the road to my house that used to only be Adam's house and once was Adam and Christie's house. The semi-rural cluster of houses grew momentarily denser near the high school, then thinned again. We followed the main road miles farther on, out to where croplands took over from small ranchettes, turned down a rutted dirt road, and pulled in next to 5 police cars and an ominously unlit ambulance gathered along the edge of a hayfield. I got out slowly as an angry man in a suit broke away from where a group of police officers were gathered and boiled over to Tony's car, glanced at me, and flushed even hotter with the rage that covered fear and horror.
What the hell are you thinking bringing her here?
I didn't know him, but he knew me. Adam was something of a local, if not a national, celebrity. Good looks are not always a good thing. That meant that lots of people I'd never met knew who I was.
We need her, Tony told him. If what you told me was right and this was something other than human, she can tell us what it was.
I caught a scent that bothered me, but it wasn't coming from the direction of the group of police officers. Frowning, I turned in a slow circle to pinpoint it. I glanced at Tony, but he was busy arguing with the other man, so I wandered off in the direction my nose told me to, away from the cluster of officials. The ground was more uneven than I would have thought a hayfield would be, maybe because it was alfalfa and not grass hay. I had to watch my step as I walked along the edge of where grass had been cut. The growing crop of hay was only about 5 inches high, the length of a lawn that had been left a week too long. Off the cultivated field, I'd have been wading through the weeds that ruled where the ground was too rocky to be farmed. A short distance ahead in that too-rough-to-harvest rocky area, a copse of cottonwoods grew where the ground dropped down in a natural drainage. They'd probably been planted as a windbreak, because we weren't near enough to the Columbia River for the growth to be natural. By my reckoning, the source of the things I smelled seemed to be coming from the same general area. Tony and the man had quit arguing to follow me.
Where are you going, Mercy? Tony called.
Something smells bad over here, I told him. Blood and feces is bad, right? I left the tilled ground and broke through the edging ring of opportunistic alfalfa into cheatgrass that released spiky, painful seed pods into my tennis shoes and socks as soon as I'd traveled about two steps. I followed the too sweet, unmistakable scent of freshly opened organs and blood to a small clearing under the trees and stopped, appalled.
Holy shit, the stranger who knew me said in reverent tones.
Then he shouted one of those words that don't mean anything except pay attention and come and are designed to carry over battlefields. This was not a battlefield, or even the remains of a battlefield. It was the remains of a slaughter. Bodies, blood, and pieces were scattered here and there and mixed, so it took me a moment to parse exactly what I saw. I finally decided to go with heads, because heads are difficult to eat, and the charnel house mess was definitely missing parts and maybe whole bodies. 5, no, 6 people, all women, 2 dogs, a German shepherd and something small and mixed breed, a horse, and some other big animal whose head was either missing or might have been under something. I have a strong stomach. I hunt rabbits, mice, and small birds while wearing my coyote skin, and I eat them raw. Before this, I would have said that lots of things make me squeamish, but fresh bodies, not so much. This was so far beyond anything I'd ever seen that I flinched, looked away, then turned back to stare, because part of me was sure that it couldn't have been as bad as I first thought. It was worse. Had someone in the pack done this? Or rather, given the volume of meat eaten, had several someones in the pack done this? These haven't been here long, I said into the silence behind me, because I had to say something, do something. Probably only since yesterday. It's only spring, but even so, something would have started rotting in a day or so, and I don't smell much putrefaction. I took a step forward to see better, and Tony grabbed my arm.
Crime site, he said. We haven't processed this. We didn't know about this one.
He looked around.
This isn't a make-out site, and there's no reason for people to be walking around here. Probably wouldn't have seen it until the guy who called us about the first body in his field came upon this by accident, too. How did she know it was here? Asked the angry man who knew who I was.
I could smell them, I told him simply. I've got a good nose. Being the mate of a werewolf can bring unexpected benefits. Both were true, just not the way I implied.
Clay Willis, this is Mercy Hauptman. Mercy, Clay Willis, said Tony. Clay's the investigator in charge. We had one body I wanted you to take a look at because it looked like it's been eaten by something. Our guy said maybe werewolves. That kill is older than this one.
He paused and took a breath.
Than these are, by more than a day.
Could have been a werewolf, I acknowledged reluctantly. If a werewolf had done this, he needed to be stopped yesterday. But, I thought with some relief, if it had been one of our werewolves who had taken this much prey, he'd been in the grips of some kind of frenzy, and that would have translated itself to the pack bonds. We all knew on moon hunts when one of us took down prey. It wasn't one of our pack. I can't tell for sure if it was werewolves from here. Maybe if I got closer. If a werewolf had been around here, he'd taken a different route to the killing field, because I couldn't smell a werewolf.
Just tell us what you see, Tony suggested, and raised a peremptory hand to keep the other people spread out behind us quiet.
I looked at the pile of bodies, trying to analyze what I saw, rather than worry about it. Someone, I began slowly, maybe several someones. I stopped and changed my mind. No. It was just one killer. He had dinner, then. A play day, maybe? Opportunistic kills? Some predators, like leopards, will bring all of their prey to one place where they can feed later. But it didn't really feel like that.
Why not several someones? Tony asked.
I tried to work that out, but my instinct said one killer, and I couldn't tell them that. When I made a frustrated sound, Tony said,
just from the top of your head, Mercy.
No sign of competition, I said, finally, distilling what my instincts had told me.
When a pack hunts, someone behind me sucked in a breath.
Werewolf packs hunt at least once a month on the full moon, I told them firmly. Around here, we mostly hunt rabbits or ground squirrels. Other places they hunt deer, elk, or even moose, just like timber wolves do, though werewolves avoid domestic animals like cattle as a matter of course.
Point taken, said Willis, not sounding angry anymore, just tired.
When wolves hunt, there's a hierarchy. Someone directs, others follow. I don't see any signs of that. No signs that someone got the good parts. My voice wobbled. Because for all my experience with killing rabbits, they were rabbits. One of the women was wearing tennis shoes that looked like a pair Jessie had in her closet. I shut up for a second to recover.
Maybe another kind of predator would hunt differently, I shrugged uneasily. But I think this is the work of just one.
Only the horse and the other big animal, which had probably been a horse too, because I thought I could pick out the start of a mane, had been disemboweled. Predators go for organ meats first. So why had he mutilated the other bodies beyond what he'd eaten? It had been deliberate and had nothing to do with eating, because there was an intact dog leg about 10 feet from me and the dog was on the far side of the pile. I breathed in, but that didn't help. The scent of blood held no trauma for me, but the stink of terror and, more faintly, pain.
I think you'll find that at least some of them were mutilated while they were still alive, I said in a low voice, because I didn't want it to be true.
But my stomach cramped with knowledge that the smell of pain meant someone had hurt. It was faint, because pain stops when someone dies.
A werewolf could do this? Asked Willis.
I told... The wind shifted just a little, and I caught another scent. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath, trying to get below the smell of the dead.
Magic, I said with my eyes still closed. It was subtle, like a good perfume, but now that I knew its flavor, it was strong. Problem was, I had no idea what kind of magic I was scenting.
Faye? Asked someone who wasn't Tony or Willis.
I opened my eyes and shook my head.
Fey magic smells different than this. This isn't witchcraft either, though it's closer to that than to Fey magic.
Witchcraft, said Willis neutrally.
I nodded. It wasn't a secret. The witches had been hiding in plain sight for 100 years or more. In places like New Orleans or Salem, Massachusetts, not Oregon, they were virtually a tourist attraction. That human culture dismissed the validity of their claims was something the witches I know thought was a delicious irony. When they had tried to hide, they had been hunted and nearly destroyed. In the open, they were viewed as fakes, and even more usefully, a lot of the people claiming to be witches really were fakes.
But this wasn't witchcraft, I said again, in case he'd only been paying attention to part of what I told him. Not any witchcraft I've smelled before, anyway. If you ask, Adam has someone he can send to check it out.
Elizaveta Arkadyevna was our pack witch on retainer.
She won't agree to talk to you, but we can get the information for you if you would like.
Not admissible, grunted Willis.
Neither probably will Mercy's testimony be, agreed Tony. But at least we won't be running around in the dark with blindfolds on.
Sister. The whisper came out of nowhere. I glanced around, but no one else seemed to have heard it. A movement caught my eye, and there was a coyote crouched in the brush about 50 feet from where we all stood. It could have been a real coyote. There are a lot of them around Finley. But I knew that the coyote was Gary Laughing Dog, not because I had some sort of special way of telling walkers from coyotes. His body language said he was looking for me, and I wasn't on speaking terms with the local coyotes. He met my eyes for a full second, then slipped away. Message received and understood. He wanted to talk to me. Otherwise, he would never have shown himself. Maybe he knew something about what had happened here. I blinked at the dead a moment. Could coyote have done this?
It was a useless question because I had no idea what he was capable of. There were no stories that I knew about coyote killing like this, but I didn't know all the coyote stories.
All the women are wearing clothing, said one of the police officers.
Could still have been sexual assault, said another one.
Cougars hide their prey so that they can eat it over a few days, the first officer offered tentatively, and someone made a gagging noise.
I don't think they realized I could hear them, because they kept their voices down.
Just for the record, you think this was done by something supernatural?
Tony asked me in a low voice. Yes, I told you I smell magic.
A werewolf did this, said Willis with authority.
I hunched my shoulders and shook my head. The magic isn't werewolf or fae. I might be able to do more if I can get closer.
You smell magic, and that means it wasn't a werewolf? Asked Willis, sounding like he didn't believe me.
I didn't blame him. I am not going to make things up just to make both of us feel better, I said. Werewolves smell like musk and mint. This smells like magic and scorched earth, and that is bad. Adam wouldn't have a lot of trouble hunting down a rogue werewolf. It would be hard for one to hide from the pack more than a day or two. We can stop a werewolf, and I'll tell Adam to keep an ear to the ground, but I don't think this is a werewolf kill.
What if it was one of your pack? Tony asked almost gently. They would know that we'd bring you in because we have before. They could hide their scent from you.
I shook my head. Trust me, this kind of mass killing? Werewolves can smell emotion, can smell when something is off. A pack member who did this could not hide it from the rest.
This wasn't done with a lot of emotion, said Willis.
I looked at him.
Look at them, he told me. The bodies are arranged for maximum effect. The animals are on the bottom, the women on top, heads together like a macabre pinwheel.
I hadn't looked that hard, but once he said it, I saw it too. A pinwheel of dead women. And now that image was going to haunt me for a long time.
The killer felt nothing for the dead, unless you're right and they were tortured before they died. But when he left this, he was in control. No strong emotions for your pack to smell.
He couldn't smell the fear and agony that I did. Nor could I tell him that no wolf could have hidden from the pack bonds while he killed so many.
Maybe someone is trying to make trouble for the werewolves, Tony said. I think it is the werewolves making trouble for themselves, said Willis.
You brought me out because you wanted my opinion, I told them. It could be a werewolf, but if it is, it isn't one of our pack. I don't think it's a werewolf. I don't smell one, but I can't get close enough to check.
Why don't you come over to the other scene, Tony said. They've got what they need from it.
He addressed that question to a woman in muddy overalls, and she nodded at him with a sort of studied weariness.
Maybe you can see something we don't.
I started to turn away and caught some movement out of the corner of my eye. I looked back over my shoulder and saw a woman kneeling right smack in the middle of the crime scene. Her blonde hair was in a professional bun that contrasted with the jeans and tank top she wore. For a surreal moment, I thought it was Christy, and almost asked her what she thought she was doing. Then she moved and broke the illusion. It was just her hair and something in the sweep of her jawline that reminded me of Adam's ex-wife. The kneeling woman was petting the severed head of the German Shepherd. She looked up, and her eyes met mine, just as Gary Laughing Dog's had. And then I realized what I was looking at, and why no one else seemed to notice her. I see ghosts. Find the one who did this, she told me sternly. I gave her a little nod, and Willis caught my shoulder.
What do you see? He asked. What made you turn back?
Only the dead, I answered, and I intend to help them as best I can. He wasn't satisfied, but I thought he knew I was telling the truth. 6. The original crime scene had only one body, another woman. She lay in the middle of the hayfield in a section roughly square that had nothing at all growing in it. The soil was black, and it stained the bottom of my tennis shoes with soot. Someone had burned a chunk of field, and put the dead woman in it like the bullseye of a target.
Staged, I said.
Yes, agreed Tony. And we'll let the scene experts have their way, but like Willis, I'm reading the other bodies the same way, arranged for maximum effect.
Unlike the other women, this one had been partially eaten. The soft flesh of her abdomen was completely gone, and most of the thigh muscles. Something with big, sharp teeth had gnawed on the bones exposed by the missing flesh. I stopped about 5 feet from the body and smelled. A lot of people had been roaming around the area, and if I hadn't been looking for it, I wouldn't have scented the same magic I detected at the other site. Magic. Death. The bare remnants of the pain and fear that had also been present with the other bodies. Over it all hung a pall of burnt grass and earth. I didn't smell any kind of volatile compound, though maybe the circle had been burned a few days earlier. Some things, like alcohol, evaporate pretty fast. I think it's the same killer, I said.
We don't get so many murders around here, especially where the victims are partially eaten, that anyone is going to argue with you, said Willis. But what are you basing that on?
The smell of magic is the same, and he killed her the same way he took out one of the horses, I told him. You see enough hunts. You pay attention to how prey is killed. He tore out the throat and ate it before disemboweling her, just like he did the horse. A lot of predators develop a favorite style of kill. I took a step closer, and the slight change in angle highlighted the ground. Paw prints, canid and huge, dug into the barren earth. They were bigger than my hand when I set it beside them. A timber wolf's paw prints would have been bigger, too, but these were a lot bigger than any timber wolf's. Not werewolf, I said with a relieved sigh. Werewolves have retractable claws that don't dig into the dirt unless they are running, almost like a cougar's. These have claw marks like any other canid. Werewolves have retractable claws? Asked the officer who'd been still at the scene when we came here. I'm forensics. Why didn't anyone ever tell me that? I can't look for werewolves if I know squat about them. Do you have a werewolf who will let me examine him for a while? The last question was directed at me. You'll have to ask Adam, I told her. Who would have to ask Bran, which I didn't tell her.
So what was it?
Most of the cops had stayed at the other site, but a couple of others had followed Willis, Tony, and me. It was one of those who asked. I don't know, I told him. I knelt beside the body and put my nose down as close to the dead woman as I could get. She had been here longer and was beginning to rot. I sorted through odors as quickly as I could. Between the rot and the burnt smell, it was difficult. I sat up. I definitely smell a canid, though not coyote, wolf, werewolf, or any dog I've smelled. I looked at Tony. I'd like to be more help. I'll recognize the way our killer smells if I run into it again. If you want, we can have some of the werewolves take a shot at identifying it.
We are taking her word that it isn't a werewolf? Asked Willis, disbelief in his voice. The wife of the Alpha? Yes, said Tony. We're taking her word. But we'll let forensics double-check. Would a werewolf have a better chance of identifying it than you, Mercy?
My nose was as good as most werewolves, better than some. But Samuel was very old, and he'd run into a lot of things over the centuries. He was not a member of the pack, but he'd come look if they'd let him.
I don't think that would be a good idea, said Willis, before I could express an opinion. If this isn't a werewolf, then we don't want to bring any in to confuse the issue. Having Miss Hauptman here is pushing it as it is.
Willis dusted off his hands and looked at me thoughtfully.
This was not a werewolf?
No, I said. He pursed his mouth.
Damned if I don't believe you. Whatever did this isn't human. Something supernatural, Tony said.
I nodded. I don't know how to prove it without anyone being able to smell this magic.
Faden, said one of the other cops. I've read all the fairy tales. The black dog is the most common of the shapes they take. Meet a black dog at the crossing of two roads or hear the call of the Gabriel hounds and you are sure to die.
I shook my head. Doesn't smell like Fae, and they have all retreated to the reservation anyway.
There are other things out there besides werewolves and Fae? Asked Willis. I got to my feet and dusted the dirt off my jeans before I answered him.
"What do you think?" I asked.
He frowned unhappily. I nodded. "That's what I think, too. I've never come across whatever did this. But judging from the tracks and the amount of meat he ate in a very short time, whatever this is, it is bigger than any werewolf I've been around. That means more than 300 pounds.
On the way over, you just explained to me that you didn't think it was a good thing to tell people that there were other things out there besides werewolves and fae,
Tony commented. I waved my hand toward the crowd of police officers by the copse of trees. If something is out there doing this, then I think that it's too late to worry about what is safe for the public to believe in. This, I don't know what this is. Finding out and stopping it is more important to public safety than trying to not make them paranoid. Willis shook his head and looked at Tony.
The brass is going to want this to be werewolves.
He turned to me.
Fair warning. They are going to want to talk to your husband. Probably not for a few days until the initial lab reports get back to us. But soon.
Is this really a conversation for dinner?
Christy interrupted me in the middle of explaining what I'd been doing this afternoon. There was an odd pause, because by interrupting me, she'd made it clear that she felt comfortable correcting me. If we'd both been werewolves, I'd have been forced to make her back down, and then her supporters would have stepped in to defend her. That I wasn't a werewolf gave me some leeway of behavior, but not much. We were eating formally again, as we had been since Christy had moved in. Four werewolves, Adam, Jesse, Christy, and I meant 8 people, which was, to give her credit, too many people for the kitchen table. Eating in the dining room with Christy cooking meant bouquets cut and arranged from the garden, good china, and cloth napkins folded into cute hat-like things or flowers. The tablecloth tonight had been hurriedly purchased, Jesse had been sent out to the store earlier, because Christy's favorite tablecloth, unearthed from the linen closet, had a stain on it, discovered just as I came in from work. She hadn't looked at me, but the sad note in her voice had Aurelie glaring at me and a few reproachful looks from everyone else, including Jesse. The other tablecloths were dirty, and there was no way we could eat at a table without a tablecloth. I had not said a number of things, one of which was, if it was such a favorite of hers, then why hadn't she taken it with her? Another unsaid comment was that if I'd known her grandmother had given it to her on her wedding day, I would have ripped it into shreds and used a paper tablecloth before I'd put it on the table for last Thanksgiving. Instead of saying anything, I'd ignored the whole dramatic show and gone upstairs to change my clothes from work, leaving Adam to listen to Christy try to decide if there was any way to salvage her grandmother's tablecloth. It had taken a pep talk with the mirror to get myself out of the bedroom and downstairs to eat with everyone else. Dinner had been served, the pack gossiped over, then Daryl asked me about the kill site the police had taken me to. I briefed Adam over the phone, but there hadn't been time to really hash the matter out.
I mean, Mercy, Christy said, as if she hadn't noticed the rise in tension when she interrupted me. Why don't we hold off talk of dead bodies until after people are done with the food? I spent too long making this for it to go to waste.
For tonight's dinner, Christy had made lasagna from scratch, including the noodles, and I'd been shuffling it around on my plate, because knowing that she'd made the food made me not want to eat it. That it was pretty and smelled good wasn't as much of an incentive to consuming it as I'd have thought it would be.
It's okay, Mom, said Jesse with forced cheer, trying to defuse the situation. Dinner is kind of when everything gets ironed out. Sometimes it's hard to get everyone in the same room afterward.
Then one of the four werewolf guards for the night ate a big bite, swallowed, and said in a prissier-than-usual version of his British accent,
Mercy, when you say it gnawed on the bones, was it trying to get at the marrow or just cleaning its teeth?
Ben, snarled Aurelie, didn't you hear, Christy?
6 months ago, Ben would have backed down. Aurelie outranked him, both as Daryl's mate and as herself. But he'd changed, grown stronger. So he just ate another bite and raised an eyebrow at me, silent, but not very subservient. Playing, I think, I said to attract Aurelie's ire. She wouldn't attack me, and in her usual mode of Christy's protector, she might do something to Ben. I decided the best way to deal with Christy's interruption was to ignore her. The bones weren't cracked, just chewed on, at least on the body I got close to. No cracking means no marrow, and if it was just trying to clean its teeth, it would have chewed harder. I ate a bite of salad. It smelled like Christy because she'd washed the romaine herself. Swallowing it was an effort. Trying not to look like I was choking was an even bigger effort. Arielle opened her mouth, but Daryl put his hand on top of hers, and she closed her lips without speaking, but not without giving him a hurt look. Adam's hand touched my shoulder, and suddenly I could swallow again. I had allies here, and Adam had my back.
"The important thing," he said, "is that we are careful. I don't want any wolf to go out running alone until we know what made those kills."
Daryl nodded.
"I'll see the word gets around."
"Good," Adam said.
"I've got people out looking for Gary Laughing Dog. Hopefully we'll find him before the police do, or he'll find you, Mercy."
"I'm pretty sure he wanted to talk to me," I told him. "If so, he'll find me before anyone finds him. I wouldn't worry too much about the police finding him since he's running around as a coyote."
"Did you check if Bran had any insights into what it was that killed all those people?"
Daryl asked. Adam ate another bite of lasagna, paused to enjoy it, then gave me a slightly guilty look. I decided not to tell him it was okay if he liked Christie's food. It was entirely understandable, but it was not okay, and I wouldn't lie to him. I looked away. To Daryl, Adam said,
"I called Bran. Without checking out the site himself, Bran wasn't able to pinpoint what could have done it. Taking the Fae out of the picture leaves us with not much. Might even be a native creature. Bran said he once encountered a Wendigo, and he believes that it was physically capable of killing this way. They smell oddly of magic, the way Mercy described them. But he didn't think that it would have left canid paw prints, or left anything except bare bones. Their curse is that they hunger in a way that cannot ever be satisfied. Also, they tend to haunt the mountain passes, not the open shrub steppe. He's having Charles do a little more research for us."
"Charles who?" asked Christy. "Bran's son," I told her, trying very hard not to be condescending and not succeeding. Maybe because I didn't try that hard. She'd been Adam's wife for over a decade, and she hadn't bothered to learn anything if she didn't know about the Marok and his sons. He's half Indian, Salish, and he has some people who will talk to him about things that are culturally sensitive, sacred things or stories they don't want prettied up with all the original flavor lost so that it can be more effectively marketed as a genuine Native American story.
"Have you asked Ariana?"
Daryl was getting good at ignoring the almost battle between Christy and me, and at the same time reducing the tension by changing the subject. I would never have thought Daryl would be such an adroit politician.
"No," said Adam, "not until we've looked at everything else. I'll call Marsilia as soon as we're done here, but I don't expect her to have much for us. She might owe Mercy and need the pack to keep her seethe safe until she gets some more vampires with power here, but she doesn't like us very much."
Ben snorted.
"You can say that again."
"Why not ask this Ariana?" asked Christy.
"Because her father tortured her with his fey hounds until she went mad," Adam told her, before I could say something spiteful or petty.
It would probably be a good idea if I refrained from answering Christy's questions. "She is Samuel's mate," Arielle said. When Christy looked blank, Arielle added, "Samuel is Bran's other son. Samuel is a werewolf, but she's coping okay with that. However, it is still an effort for her to be around any of the rest of us. Asking her about a giant dog killing people might just knock her right back off her apple cart. Not only would that be unkind to do when we don't even know if she would have useful information, but she's a power in her own right. If she goes nuts, I don't want to be anywhere in the vicinity." Ben took a second helping of lasagna and said in a contemplative voice,
"I keep having nightmares about that night when she alternated between doctoring my wounds and wanting to kill me."
"Tad said he'd see if he can get a message to Z," I said. "If it is Fae, Z will know what it is." "I thought you said it wasn't Fae." Arielle's voice was neutral.
It didn't smell fey, I said. But some of the half-breeds don't smell fey to me for whatever reason. And Z is old. He might have some idea even if it isn't fey at all.
Did you tell that to the police?
Christy looked at me brightly.
That you wouldn't have been able to tell if it had been a half-fey?
No, I said.
Why not?
Because, I said gently, there are a number of half-blood fey around here because of the local reservation. Most of them don't have enough magic to light a candle. Humans don't have a habit of treating the people we are scared of very gently. No sense getting people killed unless they are actually guilty of something.
Mercy did the right thing.
George was the fourth werewolf on duty. He was also a Pasco police officer, which lent validity to his opinion even if the kill had been out of his jurisdiction. He had that whole I was a Marine thing going that stiffened his posture and made even his casual movements have a certain purpose to them.
Police need the real information, not something that will send manpower off chasing rabbits when they should be hunting bigger prey.
As soon as he quit speaking, he returned to his plate. He ate with no wasted motion, and he didn't look up from his plate while he did so. George was fairly far up the pack hierarchy, but the only wolf he outranked at this table was Ben. It was safer for him to keep his head down, so he did.
What about the new wolf? Asked Jessie. He could have done the killing before he joined the pack.
Unlike the police, she knew enough to understand that he couldn't have done it once he was bonded. The first victim might have been before Zack joined the pack, I told her, but the others were more recent.
The killer isn't Drummond, Adam told her. I called his last alpha, who regretted losing him. Zack stayed for 6 months or so, then got restless. Warren says he's pretty soft-spoken and quiet, as submissive wolves tend to be, and definitely not our killer.
Serial killers who move around are less likely to get caught, said Jessie.
Ben shook his head.
I was over at Warren's last night. If you'd ever met Zack, you wouldn't have proposed him as your killer.
He fidgeted a little and reluctantly said,
Is there something more we can do for him? Maybe a different job, something with more of a future?
What's he doing?
Asked Aurieli. Dishes, I said.
Dishes suck, said Jessie with feeling.
She was working as a waitress for running around money and had done a couple of stints on the dishes when someone else missed their shift.
I'd rather wash dishes than pick apples, said George in tones of non-nostalgia.
The talk around the table turned to worse job stories. I excused myself when the conversation drifted to some funny event that happened back when Christy was Adam's wife, well before the pack had moved to the Tri-Cities. Even Adam got into it, had everyone in stitches about trying to find a bathroom for his very pregnant wife at 2 a.m. in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. It wouldn't have bothered me if he hadn't given Christy a tender look as she threw her head back and laughed. She had a beautiful laugh. I got up from the table, taking my plate and glass.
Didn't you like dinner?
Asked Christy as I passed her, drawing everyone's eyes to my almost full dinner plate.
I had a late lunch.
I continued on to the kitchen. And then there were all those dead people afterward. Hard to keep the smell out of my head. That shut her up. I think that all the talk about the dead bodies really had bothered her. I was letting her make me petty. I kept my movement slow and even as I scraped my plate off into the garbage. I loaded my dishes into the dishwasher and walked with deliberate steps up the stairs. By then, Daryl was carrying the narrative. I didn't run, didn't even move with speed, but every step was in as direct a line with my bedroom as I could manage. I shut the door behind me and caught a deep breath. If her stalker didn't kill Christy soon, she might just drive me to it. At this point, I wasn't even certain how much of it was her fault and how much of it was me being jealous. Not of Adam. Adam belonged to me, soul and wolf. If it were just Adam, I'd have more control. It was the pack. Pack magic, I'd learned, was real. And if enough of the pack wanted you to do something, it was difficult not to do it. When I hadn't been aware of it, some members of the pack had made Adam and me have a fight. They couldn't do that anymore, but I could feel them pressing upon me. I suspected that if enough of them wanted me out of the pack badly enough, they would succeed. What I didn't know was what that would do to Adam, but I was certain it wouldn't be good. I walked over to my chest of drawers and unfastened the chain around my neck and set it down so I could look at it. It had been a graceful piece of jewelry when I'd only had the lamb on it. Even my wedding ring, which I wore on my finger only on formal occasions,